Good afternoon. Good afternoon. There you go. Hey, wait, before you sit down, real quick, look around you and find someone good looking. All right, when you look them right in the eyes, tell them the rest of your life. All right, that didn't sound too good. Maybe find someone better looking. Maybe, I don't know. Here, point to yourself real quick. Say this, say the rest of my life will be the best of my life. You can be seated. I'm going to get you to say that as much as I can, because what you continually hear, you'll eventually believe. You know, if you hear your whole life, well, you'll never make anything yourself, that's never going to work, you start believing those kind of things. But if you keep hearing the rest of your life will be the best of your life, pretty soon you'll start believing the rest of your life will be the... How many believe the rest of your life could get better? Yeah. Let me see here. Okay, about half of you. I mean, sure hope it gets better. It doesn't matter how good it's going for you right now, the rest of your life can be the best. Life is a gift. As leaders, most of us in here are leaders, we know and understand. We know the Bible. How many believe the Bible? Let's start with that. As we should. We're all preachers, most of us. And wouldn't you hate to find out it wasn't true? That'd be horrible, wouldn't it? Has anybody ever wondered that? I mean, hey, did God really write all that stuff? There's a lot of stuff in the Bible. Anybody ever wondered that? You won't go to hell or anything. Let me see your hand if you ever. I've wondered that growing up in church my whole life. My dad's a pastor. My grandfather's a pastor. My great-grandfather's a pastor. I've been in church my whole life. I'm probably one of the most saved people you'll ever meet. I've been saved a lot. And the church I grew up in, everything was a sin. So all the only thing you could do was get saved, you know. Like, we couldn't do anything. Bowling was a sin. The movies was a sin. Everything was a sin, you know, except going to church. It's the only thing that wasn't a sin. Me and my brother, we couldn't play video games. That was a sin, you know. Me and my brother wanted to play. We played church. He's been saved a lot, too, because I'd preach and he'd get saved. So he's been saved a lot, too. But anyway, that's kind of how we grew. But I've wondered, did God really write all that stuff? There's a lot of stuff in the Bible. I started thinking one day, because if God didn't write the Bible, someone had to have. So I started thinking of people I knew. Because you want to narrow it down. If it wasn't God, you know, maybe it was my Uncle Tony. He don't do a lot. Then I found there's that scripture in there. It says, if you don't work, you don't eat. Like, nope, my Uncle Tony didn't write that, you know. You just start thinking of people you know. Maybe my wife wrote the Bible. Submit to your... Nope, wasn't her. How many, be honest, how many of you wrote the Bible? How many can think of at least three things you would not have put in there? Like 8 commandments instead of 10. Yeah. Tithing would be like 5%. Yeah. The 11th commandment, thou shalt not get caught. I don't know. Anyway, here's what I know. No human being could have ever wrote a standard this high. So if God said it, I'm just crazy enough to believe it. He said, I've come that you might have life, have it more abundantly. Life is a gift. I can't think of anything worse than getting a gift and not unwrapping it, not enjoying it. A couple of Christmases ago, I bought my mother-in-law a gift. For Christmas, I got her a cemetery plot. And so that's my mother-in-law. Anyway, I didn't get her anything this year. And she's mad at me. You know, you didn't give me anything for Christmas this year. I'm like, you didn't even use what I got you. I'm just saying, you know, when you give someone a gift. So here's this gift called life. How do we really unwrap it? How do we enjoy it to the fullest? Because that's the kind of life God planned for us. I want to get into a few things I think will help you. What an honor it is for me to be with you guys this afternoon. And I know I got in and I said, we ran into Pastor Michael Murphy. How many enjoyed Michael Murphy the last couple of sessions, last night and this morning? And so I ran to him and I said, he goes, oh, it's awesome that you're here. I said, yeah, well, I was the second choice. He goes, actually, you're about the fourth choice. So that was real encouraging. And then I found out I have to go after Pastor Neil Smith. I'm like, geez, you know, what is there left? So we're going to try to get something here. You know, it can be intimidating when you go after people that preach like that, you know. Pastor Neil, Michael Murphy, it kind of, you know, it's like reminds me, you just got to know who you are. You know, and in life and ministry, that's a big thing. We get so intimidated by other people and their gifts. It's just understanding who you are. Don't insult God by trying to be something He didn't create you to be. You know, it reminds me of these two snakes slithering down the road, and one snake looked at the other snake and said, hey, are we poisonous? Snake looked back and said, that's kind of a weird question. Why'd you ask me that? He said, because I just bit my lip. Here's all I'm saying is it's important to know who you are and just be yourself. You just got to be you. But this is my first time to Tasmania. And so I've been all over Australia, but this is the first time I've got to come down to Tasmania. So I'm excited. I've been, Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane. And I've even been to Byron Bay. I was in Byron Bay like 5 minutes. This guy's like, hey, you want to buy some drugs? I was like, no, thanks, officer. I've been Central Coast. I've been in Japan. I mean, the Gold Coast. Let's get into this because I got a few things I want to share with you. I think will help you. But it's always good to be back in Australia. Just stopped in Sydney on my way from the States for a couple hours and then straight to here. And so it's been good. I've already had like 4 flat whites. We don't have flat whites in America, so this is awesome. I've been here like 4 hours, had 4 of them. I'm going to leave a fat white if I have any more flat whites. Anyway, I was trying to lose weight this year. That was one of my goals. I'm going to lose weight. And then I saw a T-shirt the other day that said, fat people are harder to kidnap. Like, hold on. I got to protect myself. You know what I'm saying? So, but anyway, a lot of times people introduce me as a motivational speaker. We do a lot in the corporate arena as well as in the church. I'm not a motivational speaker. I can't really motivate anybody. I don't really think anybody can motivate anybody. I think you have to motivate yourself. I could inspire some people maybe. Hopefully I could inspire you a little bit, but to encourage you a little bit as leaders. But the only person that can take any of this information, the ministry you're getting, the anointing you're getting, the teaching you're getting, and do anything with it is you. You know, all this stuff we'll talk about is all in the Bible. That's what the Bible's the greatest success book ever written. That's what I love about the Bible. David's one of my favorite people in the Bible. Remember when David was greatly distressed for the people spake of stoning him. Remember they're going to kill him. They're going to throw rocks at him and said, but David encouraged himself. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You have to learn how to encourage yourself sometimes because you'll find your friends won't be encouraging you. Your spouse may not even be encouraging you. Sometimes you're going to have to learn how to encourage yourself. Now think about that. I mean, they're getting ready to throw rocks at him and kill him. How do you encourage yourself, you know? He didn't have cheerleaders, you know. This won't hurt. You know, I mean, they're getting ready to throw rocks at him. He found a way, something inside of him that I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that, how to motivate or how to encourage yourself. And like I said, David's one of my favorite people. I love David when he killed Goliath. That was awesome. Isn't that an awesome story? Cut his head off. That was cool. You know, studying success. I like David. He's the first person I found to really get ahead in life. All right, they're going to get better, I promise. But here's what I know as a leader, growth is not automatic. Growth is not automatic. You're only young once. You can be immature indefinitely. So it's a choice to learn and grow. So to invest your time to be here at the conference for the next few days is a choice. And it's a good choice that you made to invest in yourself, to learn, to grow, and then to get up and do something with what you learn. I'm going to teach you for a few minutes from this book I wrote called The 12 Traits of the Greats. It took over 500 hours, and I studied great achievers, just people that have done great in life. Some of you may recognize this book. It's been featured on Oprah. I don't know if anybody saw it on there. Anybody recognize it? Yep. Nobody? How about from this direction? Anybody recognize it? Featured's probably stretching it anyway. When I say featured, I don't know what exactly featured means. Featured. It was on there. Here's what happened, how it got on there. She did an interview with Joel Osteen, and Oprah was interviewing Joel Osteen. When she was interviewing him, they were at his office, and when they were in his office, the camera went past the bookshelf. And as it passed the bookshelf, I was about the fourth shelf down, about the third book over, I was featured there on the show. If you knew where to pause it. Anyway, over 500 hours of studying great achievers, and we'll talk about this. Isn't really about people because you can be famous and not be great. Just like you can be great and not be famous. It has nothing to do with the people. It has to do with their traits. And I'll show you in here where, like Jim Carrey, the actor, he used one of these traits. But I traced it all the way back to Abraham. Abraham was the first person to use it. There's a big difference between the person of Jesus and the principles of Jesus. The person of Jesus prepares you for heaven. The principles of Jesus prepare you for earth. The person of Jesus creates your peace. The principles of Jesus create your prosperity. So there's a big difference between the two. And you've got ungodly men who will use godly principles to achieve ungodly results. While we have the church, we don't know the principles. We ignore the principles and wonder why we don't make it or why we don't succeed. The other day, Donald Trump listed 10 things he does every single day. Donald Trump, I mean, everyone knows Donald Trump. 10 things he does every single day. I found all 10 of them in the book of Proverbs. Now, he couldn't tell you they were all in the book of Proverbs, but you've got ungodly men using godly principles while we're missing the principles that will help us. How many want to be great? How many want to be great? Yeah, it should be all of us. I mean, God, greater is he that's in me than he that's in the world. I mean, he created us to be like him, and we're created in his image, and he's great. I mean, we sing about how great is our God. So whether it's a great pastor, a great husband, a great dad, whatever it may be, wherever you want to be great, there's obviously traits that great achievers have. And so I went through a little bit of those and found them and put them in this book, and I'm going to give you, we'll get through as many of them as we can. We got a couple of sessions. Do I have a clock somewhere? Or I just kind of... Yo, just tell me when the first session's over. Oh, right there. Okay, so we'll go through some of them. We'll take a little break, and then we'll go through a few more. Is that all right? Yeah. All right. As long as I'm awake, we'll just keep going. Someone was asking me about the Ebola virus and everything, you know, and like they were asking me how's it affecting America? Is America, are they nervous, or what's going on? I said, I don't know. I said, you know, there's more Americans have been married to Kim Kardashian than have died of Ebola. So, I mean, we're not really too concerned yet. But anyway, Joshua chapter 1, verse number 8. There's a scripture in Joshua chapter 1, verse number 8. We're going to, so we'll have a little fun today. It's all right to laugh a little bit, right? Where would we be without laughter and humor? We'd be in Germany. But anyway, you know, the Bible says laughter is like a medicine. Laughter is like a medicine. You don't get so up. Don't let the enemy get you so uptight and so stressed out that you can't laugh a little bit. You know, my doctor, it's amazing. Medical science is now echoing what the Bible said 2,000 years ago. That laughter releases endorphins in disease-fighting cells. That my doctor actually prescribes laughter. He'll say, do this, this, this. Give me 5 belly laughs every day. He said 1 20-second belly laugh is like 3 minutes of aerobic exercise. Think about that. So he'll be like 5 belly laughs a day. That's like 15 minutes on the treadmill. I live 15 minutes from Krispy Kreme. I was thinking if I laughed the whole way down there, it'd balance everything out. But anyway, Joshua 1 verse number 8 says, the book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night. The book of the law, that's the Bible, shall not depart of your mouth. I mean, you shall speak it in everything you're doing. You shall meditate on it. Think about it day and night, day and nights all the time, 24 hours a day. Anytime, 24 hours a day, I can think about what God's word said, and there's going to be answers. There's going to be principles. There's going to be something in there that's going to help me, whether I'm at home at night with my family, something in there that's going to help me be a better husband, a better father. Whether I'm at the job, something in there is going to be a principle that's going to help me. I'm doing a teaching right now. I'm working on 7 secrets of negotiation. We've all negotiated. Negotiation, you know, people say, well, that's not in the Bible. You know, the Apostle Paul was an incredible negotiator. Everything, I love that everything you need's in here. There's hidden treasure and manna in the Bible for every situation. The Apostle Paul was an incredible negotiator. So I'm doing 7 secrets of negotiation that you'll be able to use in life, business, all found right there in the Bible. It's all in there, available to us. We just got to dig it out. So if I meditate on it day and night, observe and do all that's written in it, not just hear it, but do it, then you shall make your way prosperous, you shall deal wisely, and have good success. I like that. Good success. So let's talk about some of these traits. The first trait that I talk about, these are just to help you have good success, whether it's good success as a pastor, a youth pastor, a business person, whatever it is that you do. These will help you have good success. First one, let's talk about responsibility. That's the first chapter in the book. I put that first because I figure if people can get through that chapter, they'll have a chance. Because most people don't like to take responsibility. Because in today's world, everybody's a victim. You know, it's always someone else's fault we haven't made it. We're a victim of society. We're a victim of poor parenting. We're a victim of a bad economy. We're always a victim. And people that are great, the greats refuse to pass the buck. They quit blaming everyone else for their problem. Well, it's this problem my church hasn't grown. It's this problem that the youth ministry hadn't done this. Well, you know, if our sound was better, our worship would be. And we all have excuses, whatever it may be, of why we. But the greats, people that do great in life, they take responsibility for their lives, for the outcome of their life. If something's broken, they fix it. If something's wrong, they change it. If something's deficient, they make it right. They quit making excuses. People who change the world start by changing themselves. People who change the world start by changing themselves. I was in getting my physical. Doctor said, you need to lose 25 pounds. I thought, well, that's my wife's fault. She's Italian, and she cooks with lots of breads and pastas, and that's why I gained this weight. It's her fault that I gained the weight. I wanted to blame her for my problem. I wanted to blame Krispy Kreme. That's a good one. You know, that red light flashes. You know what I'm talking about? When the red light flashes, that means they're hot right then. If you've ever had a hot Krispy Kreme, man, I just went somewhere for a minute. Those things are good. Those are, I mean, and so it's easy to blame this person or that person. How many know somebody who likes to blame other people for their problems? How many know anybody like, don't point at them. But, you know, it's always, they always have an excuse. Like this guy gets pulled over by the cops. The cops said, hey, you were swerving a little bit there. I'm going to need you to step out of the car and take a breathalyzer test. The guy said, I'm sorry, officer, I can't take breathalyzer test. I have asthma. If I breathe in that thing, I could have an asthma attack. If I had an asthma attack, I could die. I'd die right here on the side of the road, and it'd be all your fault, officer, I'd be dead. The officer said, well, man, I don't want responsibility for that. How about you just get in the car, I'll take you down to the station, we'll get a blood sample from you. He said, oh, officer, I'm afraid I can't do that either. He said, well, why can't you do that? He said, I'm a hemophiliac. You poke me with that needle, I'd start bleeding. I could bleed. I'd bleed to death. I would die. I'd bleed to death and die right in the station. It'd be all your fault. You'd be responsible. The officer said, well, that's horrible. Fine, then. Just step out of the car and walk down this white line. The guy said, ooh, I can't do that either. He said, well, why can't you do that? He said, because I'm drunk. See, a lot of people have a lot of excuses of why they can't do this or why they can't do that. But the greats take responsibility for the things they need to change, the things they need to do different. I take responsibility for my thoughts. When I wake up in the morning, I have a choice. Good morning, Lord, or good Lord, morning. And I have responsibility for the things that I think. And I know a lot of times in the Spirit-filled charismatic church, we thought it said, be transformed by the removal of your mind. But it actually says by the renewal of your mind. It's a change in the way you think about things. You know, I'm responsible for my day. When I woke up this morning, today is going to be a good day. I took responsibility for that. I don't tell people have a good day. I say make it a good day. It's your choice to rejoice. I decided, oh yeah, things happen that can mess up your day. All the time things happen mess up your day. I live in Orlando, Florida. The other day I rear-ended a car. That'll mess up your day. I mean, get up in the morning, you're going, I live right by Disney, I rear into this car, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm kind of catching my bearings from hitting the car, and then I'm kind of off kilter, and then the guy hit, he gets mad, he gets out of the car, he's yelling at me, and like storming back to my car, I'm like, what in the world, he starts banging on the window, so I rolled the window down, and it was a dwarf, it was a little dwarf, like he was all mad, yelling, he goes, I am not happy, and I was like, which one are you? Listen, In life, things happen. But you have to take responsibility. You got to take responsibility for your day. This is the day the Lord has made. He didn't say yesterday was the day I made. I hope you rejoiced. He didn't say tomorrow will be the day I make. Make plans now. No, he said this is it. Today is all you've got. You don't understand what I went through yesterday. Yesterday's over. You don't understand what I got tomorrow. Tomorrow's not here. All you got is today. You don't have it tomorrow. When you get to tomorrow, you're going to rename it today. So today is really it. So why not make the most out of today? Plus, it took you your entire lifetime to get to today. I mean, whether you're 18 or whether you're 63, whether you're 29, however old you are, it took you that long to get to this day. Why not make the most of today? This is the day the Lord has made. So I have to take responsibility. And we could go on and on, but I don't have all day to get with you. But just don't let that negative mindset get in. Take responsibility for your thoughts. These two kids decided to play a trick on their grandpa. Grandpa was sleeping. And they went in where grandpa was sleeping. They took a little piece of cheese out of the refrigerator. In the States, we call it Limburger cheese. I don't know if you have that here. But it's a stinky cheese. It's just a cheese that smells really bad. So they thought it'd be funny. They took a little piece of this smelly cheese out of the refrigerator. And they went in where grandpa was sleeping. They stuck it in his mustache. Grandpa woke up from his nap. He said, my goodness, stinks in this room. He said, I'm going to the kitchen. He went in the kitchen. He said, man, it stinks in the kitchen. He said, I'm going to the lounge room. Went in the lounge room. He said, my God, the whole house stinks. He said, I'm going outside. He went in the front yard and took a... He said, oh, man, the whole world stinks. And that's what a lot of people do. They go around, the whole world stinks. Why? Because it stinks on you. And if there's stink on you everywhere you go, it's going to stink. And so you have a choice whether to bring out the positive or whether to bring out the negative, whether to bring out the good or whether to bring out the bad. It's a choice, and you have responsibility. The greats, those that achieve greatness in life, take responsibility for where they're at, for the things they need to change. If I want this year to be different than last year, I got to do some things different this year. If I want the rest of my year to be different than the first part of my year, I got to do some things different. We're going to talk about wisdom. Let's talk about wisdom right now. Another trait of great achievers is they're learners. They're learners. If I want tomorrow to be different than today, I've got to learn something today in order to make tomorrow different. If I go into tomorrow with the same information I have today, I won't have a tomorrow, I'll just have a longer today. So what am I going to learn today in order to make tomorrow different? I try to learn something every single day. I've noticed successful people learn from other successful people. Unsuccessful people think they know it all. You ever notice that? Wealthy people learn from other wealthy people. I try to learn something. The Bible, of course, Proverbs chapter 1 tells me that a wise person will increase in wisdom. So Proverbs 1 tells us, hey, if you're smart, you'll want to get smarter than you are. Proverbs 2 says that the Lord would grant you a spirit of wisdom. Proverbs 3 tells me how valuable wisdom is. It's more valuable than silver. It's more profitable than gold. It's more precious than rubies. So obviously there's a value to wisdom. I like to invest in things I find valuable. That's why you go to my house, I've got 4,000 books, thousands of CDs, DVDs. Why? Because I find wisdom valuable. How many would like to be doing better than you're doing right now? Let me see your hand. You'd like to be... Okay. If you're not doing as well as you'd like to be doing, all that means is there's something you don't know. If you're not doing as well as you'd like to be doing, it just means there's something you don't know. When I heard that, I went from being a know-it-all to being a learn-it-all. Yeah. Obviously, there were some things I didn't know. Now, listen, I've invested in real estate, and I've made some good money in real estate. I've also lost a little money in real estate. I've invested in the stock market, mostly lost money in that one. I've invested in a lot of things. The one thing I've invested in that I've never lost on was when I invested in my thinking, when I invested in me, when I felt... Well, you think you should buy all that? So you think books are worth it? I think I'm worth it. I don't buy a book because I think the paper's worth it. I buy it because I think I'm worth it. If I don't believe I'm worth investing in, why would anybody else think I'm worth investing in? Plus, if I believe the Bible, it said that wisdom's more valuable than silver. It's more profitable than gold. It's more precious than rubies. Then it goes on in Proverbs 4. It says, hey, whatever you do, get wisdom. Whatever you do, get it. Get it. It'll promote you, it says. It will protect you. I mean, think of all the stuff that wisdom will do. So whatever you do, learn. Learn something. Like I said, I try to learn something every day. I learned the other day you're more likely to get shot by a fat cop if you run. All right, some of y'all get that later. I learned not everybody spells their name the same. You ever notice that? Like, I'll go back and sign books, you know, when we have resources. And names like Amy, that's a popular name in the States. It's like an easy A-M-Y. But there's like five ways to spell that one word, that one name, Amy. Or Cheryl could be with a C or with an S. So there's always new ways. There's a new girl at Starbucks the other day, and she had a little badge on, a little trainee badge on. So I was kidding with her because I'm like, that's funny, you know, your mom named you trainee because she had that badge on it. And she looked at me, she said, it's Trinae. Like, how would I, you know what I'm saying? I would have known that. But I'm just saying, you always learn. There's always something to learn. So, and here's the thing about wisdom. Here's what I've learned about wisdom. The more wisdom you have, the less miracles you'll need. The more wisdom you have, the less miracles you'll need. Now, I believe in miracles. I love miracles. I'm a miracle. I believe God for miracles. I thank God for miracles. But I found this a lot of times in life. If I'd have got some wisdom, I'd have never ended up in the position I was in needing a miracle. I mean, have you ever made the statement, man, if I knew back then what I know now? That's what I'm talking about. You know, in my relationship, the only problem you'll really ever have is a wisdom problem. You don't have marriage problems. You have wisdom problems a lot of times. You don't have health problems. You have wisdom problems. You don't have financial problems. You have wisdom problems. You'll find the more wisdom you get. How many married people are in here? Married people. Okay, good. A lot of married people. How many single people? Any single people? Single people? Okay, got some single people. Oh, yeah, and so whether you're married or whether you're single, whichever one, you know, there's wisdom. It's funny because you see single people in church looking at married people. Oh, wish I was married. My life would be complete. It'd be so wonderful if I had someone to share things with. And then you see married people, like, looking back over at single people. Oh, freedom, freedom, freedom. Look, wherever you're at, just enjoy your season, whatever it is. But married people, how many married people, you and your spouse are totally different? Let me see your hands. Okay, yeah. Most married people. My wife and I are night and day different. How many needed some wisdom to make it this far? My wife and I, night and day different. She's from New York. I'm from Mississippi. That's different. If you never, anybody ever been to Mississippi? Anybody? Yeah, don't worry about it. Not that big of a deal. It's like, don't worry if you get there. Someone asked me, said, what's Mississippi like? I said, you know how to compliment a woman from Mississippi? Nice tooth. So anyway, my wife and I are different, you know. She's from up north. I'm from down south. She's Italian. Her family's Italian. My family, redneck. Different. You know, we've had to learn how to work this thing out. She grew up wealthy. We grew up poor. So we thought, you're supposed to be poor because poor people go to heaven. No, they told us that growing up in church. We did. How many ever heard that kind of stuff growing up in church? Yeah. We did everything we could to stay broke. We were trying to get to heaven, you know. For Christmas, my parents would give us batteries. Toys not included, you know. So we needed wisdom in this area of our relationship. Single people, there's all kind of good stuff for single people. There's even good pickup lines in the Bible, you know, whatever you need. Like, your name must be Faith, because you're the substance of things I've hoped for. You know, it's all right there. Like, hey, girl, I think you got one of my ribs. Okay. So wisdom is available. The difference between seasons is wisdom. The difference between ministries is wisdom. Wisdom, the Bible says, is the principal thing. Whatever you do, get it. How do you get it? Three ways you can get wisdom. Number one, you can get it from mistakes. That's the slowest way to get it. That is one of the ways you can get it. You can get it from making a mistake. Second way to get it would be to learn from someone else's mistakes. How many would rather get your wisdom from other people's mistakes? That's called mentorship. God puts mentors in our life, coaches, trainers to help us so we don't have to make the same mistakes. I called one of my mentors the other day. I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this and this. And he said, oh, yeah? He goes, I wouldn't do that if I was you. I said, why not? I think it's a great idea. He said, yeah. He said, so did I. Well, he'd already done it. Found out it didn't work. Now he just saved me 3 months of work, $40,000, $50,000 of investment to try this when he'd already done it and just saved me a whole lot of time. That's called mentorship. They say there's no shortcut to success. That's not true. Mentorship is your shortcut to success. You find someone who's doing what you want to do. Learn from them so you don't have to make the same mistake. So there is a shortcut to success. Now, your mentor won't always be your best friend, because your best friends like you the way you are. Your mentors like you too much to leave you the way you are. You know, your friends are your cheerleaders. Your mentor is your coach. There's a difference between those two. And so you want to find those people that will bring you up, pull you up to the next place. So wisdom, whatever you do, get wisdom. Whatever you do, get wisdom. We could, my goodness, I could talk about wisdom forever. That's my favorite topic to talk about. But let's talk about your mindset just for a few minutes. Your mindset. How many would say you've ever limited yourself by your own thinking? Your own thinking has limited you. Yeah, if we really understood the greats have a strong belief system. Well, I never could see my church getting that big. Well, don't worry, it won't. I'd never be able to get a car like that. Well, you're absolutely right. whether you believe you can or whether you believe you can't, you're right. It's the essence of faith. It's your belief system. The greats, they have this strong belief in themselves and their pursuits and their abilities, in the inner purposes that drive them. There's three ways to see yourself. You can see yourself the way other people see you, which may be good, and then again, it may not be good. But I've learned what other people think about me is none of my business. I think Eleanor Roosevelt said it this way: no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So I can't worry about what everyone else thinks about me all the time. Number two, how I see myself. Again, it could be good, but then again, it may not be good. We've all had things done to us, said to us, that could affect our self-esteem. We want to have a good self-confidence. But then again, you know, I mean, how many have ever had someone say something or do something that could have affected your self-esteem? Yeah, most all of us. I mean, one time in high school, a girl broke up with me. Yeah, I'm breaking up with you. You got low self-esteem. I'm like, great, that helped. Another time in high school, this girl called me. She goes, hey, come over to my house. Nobody's home. I went over there. There was nobody home. That hurts, you know. That's hurtful, you know. And just, so I don't want to look at myself the way other people see me. I don't even want to see myself the way I see me. If I could get a picture of myself the way God sees me. See, if we could live into the picture, I kind of picture up in heaven. You know, one is to have a confidence. A friend of mine is writing a book right now called Godfidence. One is to have confidence. Another is to have Godfidence. One is to know who I am. The other is to know whose I am. My position in life is determined by my position in Christ. So when I understand who I am in Christ, everything changes. So I kind of picture up in heaven, God's got pictures of all of us up on the wall. And the picture God's got of you, it looks good because, well, let me just say, God has got some great Photoshop skills. Because he's already touched your picture up a little bit. Yeah, he's already removed all the wrinkles of weakness. He's taken out all the blemishes of failure. The picture God has of you is a picture of perfect success. So if I can learn to live into the picture God has of me, the trophy of grace, the picture of grace that God has of me, if I can live into that, instead of lowering the picture God has of me down to how I see myself, I live into the picture of what God sees of me. It can really make all the difference in the world. And it affects your mindset, affects how you walk. Like I said, your position in life is determined by my position in Christ. When I know who I am in Christ, I walk different, I think different, I act different, I talk different, because I know who, or not just who I am, but I know whose I am. So it all affects my mindset. Fear, self-doubt, intimidation, those things would cripple a lesser individual. But they don't hinder those who have greatness written on their heart. Those men and women never lose faith in themselves. I love people that have a strong faith and belief. Have y'all seen that movie over here called Rudy? Have you ever seen that movie, Rudy? It's a great movie. It's in the States of this football player who wanted to walk on and play college football, and he's a little guy, but he didn't quit. He kept fighting. He kept going after it. And they told me you're not going to make the team, but he had a dream. Anyway, you left that. How about the movie Rocky? Yeah. Y'all heard of Rocky?
Yeah.
How many seen Rocky 1?
Yeah.
2.
Yeah.
Rocky 3. Rocky 4. Rocky 5. Rocky 6. Rocky 17. I'm still trying. You know. But you left a Rocky movie. Here's the thing. You knew Rocky was going to win, right? I mean, it's Rocky. He can't lose his own movie. But yet you're on the edge of your seat when Rocky's just, you know, he's just holding on. And he's like, yo, Adrian. And then he comes back and you're like, yes, you left a Rocky movie inspired because of his belief. I mean, I remember being in the parking lot after a Rocky movie, like hoping someone would say something to me. Because you felt like, you're like, I hope someone says something. Because you could hear the music, dun, 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 dun. And you were ready. And I love those people that have a belief, a strong belief in themselves. That don't want to, that quit. They just will go for it no matter what. Faith. People that are full of faith. I love faith people. There's this guy. He'd pray for anybody. You want someone to pray for you? You wanted this guy because he was full of faith. And a friend of mine asked him for prayer. He said, could you pray for me? He said, yeah. He said, what do you need? He said, I need to pray for my hearing. Man, he grabbed his ears and he prayed this powerful prayer. He took his hands off his ears. He goes, okay, how's your hearing now? And the guy said, actually, my hearing's next Thursday. Anyway, I love that he was ready. You know, he is full of faith. This belief system, this strong belief. in the United States, we have the Super Bowl, which is this big football game. And during the Super Bowl, it's the biggest watched sporting event on TV in America. And companies will pay up to $4 million for a 30-second commercial during this game. Up to $4 million. And I always think about that when people think, you know, you're wondering how powerful your mind is or you don't think much of your thinking. There are companies that are willing to pay $4 million for 30 seconds in your brain. I would start thinking a little more highly of myself. Not in a prideful way. You understand what I'm saying? But they understand that God gave us this incredible ability to dream, to imagine, which is another trait of great achievers, is they have this ability to imagine, to visualize. It's not a New Age thing. It's not a Walt Disney thing. This is a God thing. The ability to visualize or to imagine or to see something in your future. Say, well, where's that in the Bible? Well, there's a lot of places in the Bible. Abraham, come out of your tent. You're going to have children. Your children are going to have children. God, I'm 100 years old. My wife's 90. Abraham, look up in the sky. See those stars? That's your children and your children's children and your children's children. And all the descendants are going to come after you. And he had him visualize his future. He had him visualize or to get a picture, imagine what things were going to look like. David, he's out taking lunch to his brothers. Hey, whoever kills this giant gets his bills paid off, no more taxes, gets to marry the king's daughter. He's like, okay, what, huh? What'd y'all say? If you read that, he asked again. He said, could you repeat that one more time? What happens if you kill the giant? And they said, well, you get your bills paid off. And they repeated what happened. And I think what Dave was doing, he was taking his lunch. All of a sudden, he heard this. And then he got a picture of his future. He's like, if I kill the giant, I get my bills paid off. Huh. He saw that big red stamp. Paid in full. All of his bills. No more taxes. Taxes, zero. King's daughter. He's like, hey, I'll fight the giant. Why? He got a picture of the money and the honey. And now he's out there fighting a giant. Why? He could see. See, I think God gave you a fast forward button. God gave you a rewind button. Your fast forward button is to preplay your future. Your rewind button is to replay your past. So what does David do? He hits his fast forward button. He goes into his future. He sees his bills paid off. No more taxes. King's daughter. What's the next thing he does? Hits his rewind button. And he goes into his past. He goes, oh, I killed a lion. That was good. Oh, I killed a bear. That was awesome. I'm sure if I can kill a lion and a bear, I can take out this giant. Here's what I learned through that. Little victories always lead to big successes. So use your memory for the victories in the past. And remember those little things. You say, well, we did this at church. Just, hey, little victories. Keep track of those things that you accomplish along the way because they're leading to the big things. What does he do? He goes out and he kills the giant. So understand, God gave us this incredible ability to imagine. I would encourage you. I was at my parents' house one night, and I'm looking around their house, and there's pictures all over the house, wonderful pictures. There's my picture of my senior year of high school, still on the wall at my parents' house. That had to be 8 years ago, nine maybe. My brother's wedding, our family vacation, all these pictures, wonderful pictures, but they were all pictures of the past. Memories, 90% of the walls, nothing wrong with memories, 90% of the walls were covered with wonderful memories. But I noticed in my parents' house that there was not one picture of the future. There were only pictures of the past. I started thinking about that. I'm like, you know, at my house, I don't really have any pictures of the future. This was several years ago. So I went home and I said, what if I just had one wall where all I'm going to put on that wall are things I want in my future? I mean, we got pictures of the past. Why not some pictures of the future? So I started thinking of stuff I wanted in my future. How many have got some places you'd like to take your family on vacation? Let me see here. You got some place you'd like to go on vacation. You got it in your mind. I always wanted to take my family on the Disney cruise. Disney has its own cruise line. I wanted to take my family on the Disney cruise. So I did. I cut a picture of the Disney boat out, and I put it up on the wall. One day, I'm going to be on that. There's my room. I'm going to circle my room right there. Yeah. I wanted this camera. We wanted to get this new camera because I had this idea to make these daily videos. Just to encourage people, a little daily. We call it the Daily with Dr. Dave. It's free, and you can go to our website and sign up for it. But years ago, before that ever happened, I had an idea of having this camera, this little studio in our offices where I could go in and record these daily videos. So I got a picture, put it up on the wall. I wanted a tour bus. I don't know why I wanted that. Anyway, I put it up on the wall. oh, I wanted to give $100,000 to my church. I wanted to give $100,000. So I wrote a check to my church for $100,000, and I put it up on the wall. One day, I'm going to give, not how much I want to make. See, that's what Jim Carrey, he used this principle. Back in the early 90s, he used to be on a show called In Living Color. But he wanted to be in movies. So in the early 90s, he wrote himself a check for $10 million, and he dated it. You got a date check. Thanks. He dated it November 1995. And services rendered, major motion picture. To make a long story short, within 2 weeks of November 1995, Jim Carrey signed a deal for his first major movie. The movie was called The Mask. And guess how much he got paid? $10 million. For 4 years, he carried a check in his wallet for $10 million. Every time he opened his wallet, he'd see it. Something has to be seeable before it's believable, believable before it's achievable. So you get a picture. So I got pictures of stuff I want on my wall. Wouldn't that be awesome? How many would like to give $100,000 to your church? Wouldn't that be awesome? Here's $100,000. That'd be awesome. Reminds me of a church got a telephone call and the secretary answered the phone. The guy said, yeah, I'd like to speak to the head hog at the trough. Secretary said, excuse me? You talking about the pastor? He said, yep, that's what I'm talking about, the head hog at the trough. She goes, that's rude. That's our pastor. We love him. We respect him. We don't talk about him like that. Can I help you with something? He said, yeah, I heard about the new building you're building. I just wanted to give $100,000. The secretary said, well, hold on. Let me see if Porky's in. So I just got all these pictures of stuff I want. Like that $100,000 check, I wrote void on it in case my pastor came over. Tried to get it before I was ready. But I just got pictures of stuff I want in my future. Like that bus. I don't know why. I thought that'd be cool to have one of those big tour buses. And, you know, it was amazing. As I called a guy, he had one of those tour buses. I called him to see if I could rent his tour bus. He goes, I don't really rent it, but I would sell it to you if you're interested. I said, well, I'm not really in a position to buy it. He said, well, look, he said, I'll make you a deal you can't refuse. Well, no, I'm into a deal I can't refuse. And so he told me about the bus. He said, you know, he said, I just bought a Cadillac. I owe $35,000 on it. He said, if you'll give me $35,000 today, you can have the bus. Now, I know those buses, even used, they were $200,000 or $300,000 for these big buses. Anyway, that day I bought the bus. It was the Backstreet Boys. Remember the Backstreet Boys? It was the Backstreet Boys tour bus. And I bought it for $35,000. I don't know about you. I call that favor. That's a whole other message. But something has to be seeable before it's believable, believable before it's achievable. And I've got different things on my wall now. We've been on the Disney cruise. We've done different things like that. But I don't know what it is that you want to do, where does you want to go, something you need for your ministry, something you'd like to give. I would encourage you, create a dream wall. Maybe you can't start with a wall. Maybe you can get like a poster board and start a vision board or something. But use your imagination to get a picture of where it is, of where God's taking you, what God wants to see. I remember I used to pastor a church for a few years. And I remember going in the church during the day when no one was there. And I'd sit up on the platform, I'd put a chair up there, and I'd just picture what I wanted to see during service. I pictured the place full of people worshiping God, lifting their hands. I saw young people down in the front. I mean, I would get a picture before it ever happened on Sunday. It happened in my mind before it happened in my life. And so get a picture through your mind's eye. God gave you this incredible ability to imagine. Use that ability to see the dreams and the things that God puts in your heart come to pass. Oh, what I got. Okay, let's give you another one. Let's talk about, are y'all getting anything out of this? I'll tell you what I'd do in these next two sessions is I would just listen for one thing. I was going to a meeting the other day and I got in the car to leave and I couldn't find my keys. And anybody ever lost your keys? Don't you hate losing your keys? That's horrible. Looking all over. How many spent a lot of time looking for keys? You know, it's like you look in the freezer, like I've never left my keys in the freezer, but you looked in there. I have a place now when I come in the garage where I hang my keys. So anytime I leave, I know right where my keys are. It's called order. Order is the accurate arrangement of things. You'll be amazed at how good you feel when you just put things in order. Whether it's your office, whether it's your house. How many of you ever straightened up the shoes in your closet and felt like you could conquer the world? You know what I'm talking about? Like, what else can I get done today? Why? Because God is a God of order. So when you begin to create order, that's a God thing. That's why you feel so good when you got order. You clean out your garage or whatever it may be. And so now I got a place where I hang my keys. Because you'll waste a lot of time looking for your keys. I mean, you'll waste time. And time is all you've got. That's really all God gave you was time. You know, every country has a currency. Australia has the dollar. Japan has the yen. England has the pound. Mexico has the pesos. Every country has a currency. Heaven has a currency. Heaven's currency is faith. The Bible says anything you need from heaven you receive by faith. So faith would be heaven's currency. Earth has a currency. Earth's currency is time. All God gave you was time. We all showed up here the exact same. I didn't show up here with friends. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any clothes. We all showed up on the earth naked with a lot of time. Anything you have today, you traded your time for. Anything you don't have today, you've been unwilling to trade your time for. I didn't have friends. I traded my time with someone, and then I built friendships. I didn't have money. I traded my time with someone. They gave me a paycheck. You hear people say, time is money. Time is money. The other day, I was reading Bill Gates, one of the wealthiest men in the world. They said Bill Gates, they were talking about how valuable his time is. They said if Bill Gates was walking and he dropped $1,000, his time is more valuable to keep walking than to stop and pick up the $1,000. Think about that. How many like to be walking behind Bill Gates? Like, I got a minute. Let me grab that. But see, when you understand time is all you got, it puts a little more value on your time, on the moments of your day. There's 24 hours in a day, 24 boxcars on my train to success. So what I put in each of those boxcars determines what I get at the end of the day. I don't know what it is in Australia. In America, I read the other day, the average American watches 6 hours of television a day. 6 hours. That means six boxcars are filled with CSI Miami, CSI Las Vegas, CSI New York. A lot of CSIs, aren't there? Think if you just took out one CSI, right? Just one. Not Miami. That one's awesome. I love that one. But I mean, if you just took out 1 hour a day and invest it in yourself as a leader, to read a book, to listen to a CD, to watch a podcast. If you just took 1 hour a day to learn something, man, think of where you could be. I just don't have time to learn something new. I just don't have time to learn something. If you just took 1 hour a day. So here you go. I got my day. And all I plan my days, and there's all kind of, oh my goodness. I have three kinds of days, basically, what I have. I have result days. That's one of the kind of days I have. A result day is where I spend 80% of my time working on my yes, my passion, my purpose. We'll talk about passion in a little bit. Two most important days in your life, the day you're born, the day you discover why. Why are you here? What's your purpose? What's your reason? When you're doing what you love rewards you. We were talking in the back about different athletes. You know, Michael Jordan loves basketball. Basketball rewards him. Bill Gates loves computers. Computers reward him. Tiger Woods loves golf and some other stuff, and that kind of messed him up. But golf was rewarding him until, you understand what I'm saying? When you're doing the things that you love to do, what you love rewards you. And so all my time is valuable. So I have my result days where I spend my time working on my yes, my purpose. Second kind of day I have is a prep day. A prep day is where I prepare for my result days. Either by learning a new skill, by delegating, by training my staff, whatever it may be. I'm getting ready so that on my result days, I can have the most focus. Now, the key to being more successful is to have more result days. The more result days you have, the more successful you become. The more days you have where you're working on that, your purpose in life, the thing that brings the greatest results, that's where you see the most success. The third kind of day I have is a rest day. Rest day. That's the one thing we forget about sometimes in ministry is rest. That's valuable. Rest rejuvenates you. Rest energizes you. Tired eyes rarely see a bright future. When fatigue walks in, faith walks out. When we get tired, you know, even God, even he rested on the seventh day. He took a break. Everybody needs to rest every now and then. Rest rejuvenates you. When you're tired, you're more easily offended. The great theologian Donald Trump said this. He said, I never make important decisions when I'm tired. When you're tired, you look at the short-term fix instead of the long-term solution. When you're tired, mountains seem bigger, valleys seem deeper. When you're tired, you see, it's so important that you rest. Rest is important. Anyway, what was I talking about that got me all the way over here on time? That's all just a bonus. Oh, my keys. Next session, we're going to talk about focus. So I couldn't find my keys. Finally, I found my keys. I got in the car. I got ready to head to this meeting. So all that other part was just a bonus. Y'all, rest. I don't know about you, but rest. I like water. I like water. How many water relaxes you? Like going to the beach, sitting on the beach. Isn't that restful? I mean, that's a good vacation. Rest. You got what, so much water around Australia. Just beautiful. Just to rest. Doesn't have to be the ocean. Sometimes it could be a lake. I just like water. Sometimes I just fill up my bathtub and sit on the edge. You know, if you put those blue things from the toilet in your bathtub, it's a beautiful blue. It makes it a beautiful blue water. You can just sit there all day and just enjoy it. But so here's what I was saying. I finally found my keys. I get in the car. I'm headed to the meeting. Here's what I noticed five minutes on the way to the meeting. What I realized, the only thing that was keeping me between where I was and where I needed to be, between my house and the meeting, between this level of success and that level of success, between this place and that place. The only thing that was keeping me between here and there was not my key ring. It was just a key. It doesn't take a lot of keys to start your car. It just takes the right key to start your car. A small hinge can swing open a big door. A little key can open up a big bank vault. Sometimes we're looking for all this stuff when all it takes is one thing. So between this last hour or so we had and the next hour we have together, just be listening for a key. Just that one thing. You say, you know what? That's what I needed. I needed that to understand that about my mind. So I need to work on my thinking. That's where I'm missing it. Or wisdom. That was the thing I needed. I need to invest more in wisdom. So just be listening over these next couple sessions for that one thing. You say, oh, that's what I needed. That's what I needed to hear. Let me give you. One last thing. So I want to cover these other ones in the next session. Do I have time for one last thing? I'm supposed to be done at 2, right? Okay, I got 3 minutes. Passion. Let's talk about passion just for 1 second, and then we'll take a break. I said the two most important days in your life, the day you're born, the day you discover why. Every great achievement of mankind was the achievement of a maniac with a mission. You cannot be great until you have a burning desire that consumes you. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive, who've discovered their purpose and their passion. In the book I wrote, 12 Traits of the Greats, in the passion, the chapter on passion, I ask you some questions. There's several questions in here you start asking yourself, like what you hate. What you hate is a clue to your passion. Who do you most admire? It's a clue to you. Know, how could what I hate be a clue to my passion? How many have heard of Christine Kane? Christine Kane, A21 movement. Do you think Christine Kane loves human trafficking? No, she hates human trafficking. Something she hated became a passion for a problem she was created to solve. So you got to look at all these different things when you're trying to discover, why am I here on the earth? I'm not just here to take up space and breathe air. How do I fine tune? How do I hone in on my passion or my purpose? And when you discover your passion, when you're doing what you love, when you're doing what you love rewards you. And my goodness, we could do some more on that stuff. But in the next session, how many of you ever made a bad decision? How many like to make right decisions all the time? We'll talk a little bit about decisions. Focus, the only reason people fail, broken focus. You want to destroy someone's dream, give them another dream. Break their focus, get them going two different directions. We'll talk a little bit about focus. We'll talk about adaptability. Adaptability. If you don't learn to change, you'll become a fossil pretty quick. Things are changing so fast, especially in society today. I mean, by the time you opened your iPhone 6, they've already announced the iPhone 6S is coming. You know, I mean, things are advancing and changing. How many have apps on your phone? How many have apps? Like every day, do your apps need to be updated? Like, oh my goodness, I just updated that yesterday. But things are changing all the time around us, so we've got to be willing to be adaptable. Change is vital to great leaders and being a great leader. Anyway, we'll talk about some more of these 12 traits of the greats. And be listening. Like I said, at the end of the last session, I'm going to give you a little test to make sure that you found something that helps you, a key. How many already got one key? You got something. Let me hear two people real quick. Something that already just jumped out at you. You say, you know what? That's going to help me. That's going to help me in my. Let me right over here. How many of that kind of spoke to you? Getting a picture of your future, that dream, I call it a dream wall. Just a wall of things I want in my future, places I'm going in my future. We did that as kids. I mean, I remember doing that as kids. My little boy did it back at Christmas time. He had the Toys R Us catalog. And he's like, I see this in my future. I see that in my future. Yeah, one more before we take a break. One more. Someone else got one thing. Let me hear you. Wisdom, the value of wisdom. It's more valuable than silver. It's more profitable than gold. If you want tomorrow to be different than today, learn something today to make tomorrow different. If you want the rest of the year to be different than the first part of the year, learn something to make it different. If you go into the rest of the year with the same information, you get the same results. Understand the value of wisdom. God put a whole book in the Bible just to help us understand how valuable wisdom is. Wisdom promotes you. Wisdom protects you. I always thought God protected me. Then I found the Bible. Wisdom protects me. Think about that. How does wisdom protect you? If you drove here today, how many locked your car out in the parking lot? How many locked your car when you got out of the car? Okay. Oh, look for who didn't. No, didn't. Why did you lock your car? Did you lock your car because you don't trust God? No, you lock your car because you don't trust the people that might get in there. So God gave you wisdom to protect you. Wisdom protects you. Anyway, there's so much more, and we'll get into a little bit more in the next session, and I won't keep you quite as long, and we'll get you out of here. All right? Thanks. God bless you. Thank you.